spite of harm, in spite of grief and strife.
I got to remind you, you are listening to WORT 89.9 FM here in Madison, Wisconsin, WORTFM.org. The show has been the Green Morning Radio. My name's Brian. So glad to be with you. I'll be back next week. Got Dana Perry coming in at 9 o'clock. Nice and early to talk about her music, her open mics, and her... she'll even play a couple, so that's pretty cool. Boy, what did we just hear? We just heard O'Darby and Kelsey Miles and Pat McCurdy and the Kurok all playing in town this week. Go support live music this week. Come see my band on Thursday. I shouldn't be promoting it that much, but sorry. Coming up in just a couple seconds, BBC News, followed by a public affair. Have a great week, folks.
This is Danielle Jaworwiecka with the BBC News. Hello. The Philippines President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. says the country's former leader, Rodrigo Duterte, is en route to the International Criminal Court at The Hague after he was arrested under an ICC warrant. A plane was seen leaving Manila Airport. Mr. Marcos said the former president would face charges relating to what he described as Mr. Duterte's bloody war on drugs and explained his government's decision.
Interpol asked for help. And we oblige because we have commitments to the Interpol, which we have to fulfill. If we don't do that, they will no longer help us with other cases involving Filipino fugitives abroad. This is what the international community expects of us.
Mr. Duterte's daughter, Sara, is vice president and a Marcos political rival. She said the arrest amounts to persecution. Donald Trump has dramatically stepped up his trade war with Canada and renewed a demand that it become part of the United States. He says the tariff on imports of Canadian steel and aluminium will double to 50% from Wednesday. The worsening dispute has contributed to further falls on the US stock markets. Our correspondent Theo Leggett has more details.
Canada is the US's biggest supplier of steel and aluminium. And if the cost of that to the US consumer goes up, then prices, you have to assume, within the United States will rise. So there is a risk that this could fuel inflation, potentially severely. And that's when you add it to all the other potential tariff impacts that we're seeing at the moment. And this is one of the reasons why we saw relatively substantial falls on the stock market yesterday. They're now down to below where they were before the election. So investors were confident that there would be a business-friendly environment. Now it seems they're much less confident.
The trial over the death of the Argentine football star Diego Maradona has begun in Buenos Aires. Seven medical staff face charges of involuntary manslaughter. Warren Bull reports.
Maradona died of cardiac arrest in 2020 while recovering from surgery. He was 60, and his death triggered an outpouring of grief and recrimination in Argentina, where he was revered as a football genius after captaining the national side, which won the 1986 World Cup. As the trial opened in Buenos Aires, prosecutors said he'd been left in a situation of helplessness due to reckless home care. A medical panel found he could have survived with proper treatment. Maradona's neurosurgeon, psychiatrist and medical coordinators are among the accused, who deny the charges.
The Pakistani military has deployed special forces and helicopters against separatist rebels who stormed a passenger train and took hostages. The Jaffa Express was carrying more than 400 people when it was attacked in Balochistan province. A banned separatist group, the Baloch Liberation Army, said it carried out the attack. BBC World News. The US National Security Advisor has indicated that progress is being made at talks with a high-level Ukrainian delegation in Saudi Arabia. Mike Waltz said, "We're getting there," on a break from the talks in Jeddah. Washington has framed the discussions as a chance to see if Ukrainians are committed to President Trump's plans for a rapid ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine. President Zelensky's chief of staff referred to them as a work in progress. Mexico's attorney general has announced an investigation into the discovery of a clandestine crematorium and training site. The ranch was allegedly run by the Jalisco New Generation Drugs Cartel. Clitzia Sala reports.
President Claudia Sheinbaum called the discovery horrifying. images of hundreds of shoes, clothes, and several ovens possibly used to cremate bodies surfaced online when community groups inspected the ranch following an anonymous tip. In addition, they found human remains, farewell messages, and a potential list of victims. Local police raided the ranch 6 months ago, arresting 10 people and rescuing 2 hostages, but didn't investigate further. The Attorney General says it's not plausible that local authorities were unaware of the site.
Police in Britain have arrested a man on suspicion of gross negligence manslaughter following the collision on Monday of a Portuguese container ship with an American oil tanker off the east coast of England. A criminal investigation has also been launched. Both ships caught fire in the collision. One crewman is missing, presumed dead. The veteran reggae singer Coco T, known for his smooth vocals, has died aged 65. He gained fame in the early 1980s, and some of his biggest hits include Lost My Sonia, Riker's Island, and She Loves Me Now. The Jamaican culture minister praised Coco T as one of the greatest reggae singers, and the prime minister said Coco T's influence helped to secure worldwide fame for Jamaican music. And that's the latest BBC World News.
YWCA Madison invites you to join them to celebrate the 22nd annual Circle Fundraiser on Thursday, March 20th at the Alliant Energy Center from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. YWCA Madison is eager to gather with their community of supporters to share stories that speak to who they are and demonstrate their values of humanity, community, growth, and restoration, which are at the heart of how they move as an organization. Attending the Circle fundraiser impacts the lives of thousands of women, children, and families who are served each year through YWCA's transformational programs in housing and shelter, employment and transportation, restorative justice, and learning and movement building. More information about the Circle fundraiser and other YWCA programs and resources can be found at ywcamadison.org. That's the 22nd annual Circle fundraiser on Thursday, March 20th at the Alliant Energy Center. Keeping you informed of community events and resources, this is WORT 89.9 FM and WORTFM.org.
6'6" above sea level. I grab my mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the sound community.
Good afternoon. Welcome to A Public Affair. Thanks so much for tuning in. My name is Carlos Dávalos. I will be your host for the next hour. We have an amazing show today, a really fun show. It's going to be about music. We're going to talk about music. We're going to talk about rock and roll. And we're going to talk about how Mexico, between more or less the years 1955 and 1965, received from the United States certain songs, certain, rock and roll in general, but we're going to go through some examples. We're going to hear the original song in English, and then we're going to move to the equivalent example in Mexico, in Spanish, with Mexican artists. Before going into that, I will present my guest today. It's an absolute pleasure to introduce Dr. Julia Palacios. She is a mentor of mine. And by the way, this is the person that gave me my first on-air opportunity in Mexican radio more than 20 years ago. So I'm very happy and really, really excited to have her on the air today to talk about the things that in the beginning had us come together and be on the air on Mexican radio. Before that, let me just share with you, she is a communications and a historian, I should say first, sociologist, specialized in pop culture and popular music. She was a full-time professor at Mexico City's Universidad Iberoamericana from 1983 to the year 2023 at the History Department and then at the Communications Department, where I met her when I was a lot more younger. She is professor and researcher for various projects for Universidad Iberoamericana and other academic institutions in Mexico and the United States.
She was a media anchor and producer in national radio and television since 1990, a radio founder and anchor in Ibero 90.9, 90.9 FM, Mexico City. That's the radio station where she's been on the air since the year 2003. Welcome, Julia. Thank you so much for being us. It's an absolute pleasure for me and an honor to, in a way, close the circle and be with you here in Madison, Wisconsin. Wort.
Oh, Carlos, this is great. Absolutely wonderful to see you here, to be here connected from Mexico City to Madison, Wisconsin. And yes, remembering all those years when you were my student, exactly in a course of history of rock and roll, or rock, history of rock in general. And we started the radio station, and come over to the program. And here we were every single day doing 1 hour of music, classic rock and whatever. And it was wonderful.
I remember those years. Yeah, amazing years. And it's amazing to have you now as my host in a public affair. By the way, we have a phone number, 608-256-2001, in case you have a comment, a question, or something to share with us. And why don't we start? We're going to talk about more or less the years, the mid-50s to maybe the mid-60s, early 60s. We're going to talk about rock and roll. We're going to talk about really important songs, famous songs, songs that became mainstream right away. And before going into that, I would like to ask you if you could share with us, if you can paint the picture of how Mexico was during those days, you know, in cultural terms, social terms, maybe also political terms, and then we can start talking about the music.
Yeah. Okay. I'll be very brief, but this is important for the audience to understand. Mexico is a huge country and culturally very divided. So we have to think that Mexico usually is very centralized, and the capital of the country, Mexico City. From here, from Mexico City, which is very small in area, but very large in population, things are determined. And the rest of the states and the whole country have like their own dynamics. And yes, some very poor, some very disconnected from the center, some very, well, always admiring the center. And for this issue that we're going to talk about of music, I want to say that the northern part of the country, very disconnected from the center, from Mexico City, had a stronger influence from the United States because of the border, as we see right now. So they were always connected and always looking north instead of looking towards the center. But what happened by, let's say, the mid-50s, there was a big, big issue, which was anti-communism. The war in Korea had just ended, and all the Cold War was on in the United States and the rest of the world. And in Mexico, in particular, there was a fear of communism because of religion. We were mostly a Catholic country, so there were signs in every house that say, Christianism, yes. Communism, no. So there was this fear of communism because, not because of political, economical reasons, as it was capitalism versus communism in the Cold War, but mostly because of this religious thing. On the other hand, we were a socialist country because we had the first socialist revolution in the 20th century. The Mexican Revolution was a socialist revolution, and we had many, many socialist institutions. So we sympathize with communism and socialism in a certain part of our lives. So it was like a contradiction, but that was going on. And then on the other hand, when the Second World War, we had we were allies of the United States, not only in the military. We had this squad, the Squad 201, that sent soldiers to support the United States, but also we had the famous Bracero program that sent workers, excuse me, that sent workers to the United States because the land and the factories, well, the factories, the jobs were taken by women, but then the agriculture was left also, and then these Mexican agricultural workers were hired in the United States to support the United States during the war. When the war ended, the Bracero program didn't end. So they continued it until 1965, officially. But this is important because this connection, cultural connection, with clothes, music, behaviors, consumption, was very strong because we were in, you can see it in films, for example, in the music, because all this cultural production from the States was coming to Mexico through all the Mexicans that were there, but also because we wanted to be Americans, because the American way of life was very strong. Yes, Carlos.
Would it be fair to say that one of the reasons why all these influence arrived in Mexico was because of this work program, this labor program that exchanged, created a lot of exchange in terms of people going, Mexicans going to the United States, then going back to Mexico and bringing back a number of, whatever influence from the United States.
Yes. In this moment, yes. But the connection with the United States, well, it's a long, long story, because Mexico was in the United States, the Mexican territory, and many Mexicans, which they prefer to call themselves Hispanics now, but Texas, California, New Mexico, all that was Mexico. So Mexico was there way before. But let's say in this moment, when there was an explosion in the United States of popular culture, of consumption, because we have to remember that the war didn't take place, the Second World War, in the United States. So there was a huge affluence, economical affluence in the United States. So it became the land of opportunities, and this American way of life became an example for the rest of the world. So that was portrayed mostly, I believe, in magazines, but also in cinema, this American way of life. And that was sent to the rest of the world. But here we are, very close, and we want to be that. We want to do chewing gum. We want to drink Coca-Cola. We want to have cinemas. We want to have the fads, the latest fads. We want to dance swing. We want to have big bands. So everything that was going on there was automatically imported to Mexico. So in this moment, with the Bracero program, of course, people coming and going, the influence was there. But way before that, with all this cultural Chicano movement, then this generations of Mexicans being born there that spoke half English, half Spanish, broken Spanish, that wanted to be Americans, and they didn't want to come back. Or they come back, but they come back, look at me. We have this actor in film, Tintan, which was a Pachuco. And the Pachucos were this personification of what the American culture was with the suits and the chains and the elegance and speaking half English or using English words. You know, it was a connection, very strong connection. Okay, what happens that Mexico wants to get into that and wants to be modern? Because that's the message. We want to be modern. And with all the affluence and the money and the good economics in the United States and the growth of all this consumption culture and popular culture that wants to invade the world, because that's an ideological move. Yes, I want the world to see how it's wonderful to be capitalist. It's wonderful to be American. So with all this, Mexico wants to be modern as well. Being a very traditional country, we started importing many American things. And then it's a very important moment in media history, for example, with the creation of television, of commercial television. So we have our own television, but we imported a lot of series and programs. In radio, we started listening to music from the United States, sung in English. We saw many, many films from the United States. Well, that was before. But in this moment, all this that portrayed modernity, we wanted to do. And then, for example, things like in the United States, the explosion of suburban cities. In Mexico, we did too. We had this satellite city and all these areas in the outskirts of Mexico City that were a replica, an imitation of this modernity, commercial malls, freeways, large cars. We wanted all that. So here we are, wanting to be modern. But then modernity had very downsides, very strong downsides. And so we want to be commercial. We want to be modern. But we want to keep our conservatism. Yes.
We let's start with the music. So would it be safe to say, Julia, that the first rock and roll songs, the first rock and roll examples that were received from the United States were through movies, were through the radio, both?
Both. Movies lasted a long time to arrive in Mexico. It was not an immediate thing. So maybe 1 year after they appeared in the United States. But for example, this film, Blackboard Jungle, that appeared in 1954, and the opening song was Rock Around the Clock of Bill Haley and his Comets. People would go to the movies, these teenagers, and say, look, they are dancing rock and roll. This is the way it's danced.
Amazing.
It was shocking.
The first images.
One person told me, you got in the movies like an adolescent and you came out like an adult. Because
wow.
you had seen rock and roll. Now, rock and roll, when it appeared in the United States and started to be exported to the world, everyone thought it was a new rhythm. And there were many new rhythms, and big bands played the new rhythms because there were a lot of parties and dances with big bands. So the big bands played swing, but played calypso, but played mambo, but played cha-cha-cha, which were danced by the youth. But when rock and roll appeared, then the big band said, okay, let's incorporate the rock and roll, because they thought it was just a new rhythm. And it took a few years to understand, and mostly I say until, well, it was pretty soon, in 1956, when Elvis Presley was signed by RCA, one of the major companies, and became national phenomenon, an international phenomenon. And every record company wanted to have an Elvis Presley. So a youth culture, a rock and roll culture with idols emerged. So then they say, okay, this is not, rock and roll is not just a rhythm for the orchestras or for the big bands. It's something different because it has a cultural youth message. Okay, we have to talk about the baby boomers in the States and in the rest of the world, but the baby boomers everywhere said, okay, now we have music for ourselves. Now we don't have big bands and crooners singing, rhyming moon with June and, and honey yeah. with lovely. And now we have words and things that say something different and movements. Even though rock and roll was danced like swing, it was crazy and it was sexual and it was pervert. And mostly it came, one of the roots of rock and roll came from rhythm and blues. And it was bad. It was sexual. It was the music of nothing good. So then that was attractive. It was co-opted by the mainstream, the white mainstream. And then we have, yes, we have Elvis Presley. We have many others.
Before that, sorry for the interruption. Let's start listening to some music because we're going to go. The first example is precisely by a person, a black person, one of the biggest names in rock and roll that died recently, actually. So for the people listening, we're going to let the song play for a few seconds. We're going to come back and then we're going to showcase the Mexican example. The same song, but translated into Spanish, played by Mexican musicians, by a Mexican band. Okay?
I want to say something very important. That this song, for example, what are we going to sing and listen? And rock and roll appeared in the mid-50s and second part of the 50s. And in Mexico, the music industry, the recording companies accepted to record the bands of young people, the rock and roll bands of young people, until 1959, and appeared mainstream until 1960. Because of this, they say, well, we have to do it. They are being so successful in the United States that we cannot deny the power of rock and roll. So it's interesting how they adopted it in Mexico, translated it, because many Mexican young people with their bands wanted to write their own songs in English. And then they say, no. No one is going to understand English, so you translate them into Spanish so people can understand. And that's why we came into the cover versions in Spanish.
That's amazing context. So I'm sure everyone out there will recognize the first song. This is Good Golly Miss Molly, Little Richard. I'm pretty sure everyone out there recognizes that song. It's still today. It's something that generations and generations listen to. What I'm not sure is if people out there will recognize the Mexican version of this. And it's called La Plaga. And it's performed by Los Teen Tops. And this is exactly what Julia is explaining to us right now. There was a three, four, maybe five year gap between the release of the American version, Little Richards in this case, and then the Mexican cover that came out. Julia can clarify us when after we hear La Plaga from Los Teen Tops.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. A really, really close cover of the of the Little Richard's version. Let me ask you this, Julia: is the lyrics are exactly the same? Were there changes? What? How can you explain to us about that?
Well, it's difficult because English is totally different. So they were very creative. And the interesting thing is that, for example, the translations into Spanish were done by the same musicians. This this version of Good Golly Miss Molly was made into Spanish by Manny Martinez, the drummer of the Teen Tops, Los Teen Tops. Well, they even have an American name, the Teen Tops. I mean, Los Teen Tops, with a Spanish article. No, they changed it, and the sense of the song was kept, but many times it was the words were changed because Spanish sounds different. I must say that the cover versions were done all over the world by teens, but the first rock and rolls translated into Spanish versions were done in Mexico. Because, for example, the Beatles and the British groups did a lot of covers. The first album of the Beatles was a lot of covers, and the second album, because that's what they did. But they were singing the songs in the same language. But here, the fascinating thing is that it was adapted into another language. So it was a very interesting appropriation.
Amazing.
And also, it was very funny. I mean, they were talking about rebels without a cause because of the film of James Dean and all that. But I mean, these rebels were so innocent.
Yeah. For all the people out there, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to A Public Affair on WORT 89.9. This is Madison's community radio station. And my guest today is Dr. Julia Palacios. She's in Mexico City. She's an expert on rock and roll and many other things, but she did her PhD researching the years 1955 and 1965. So if you have a question, please, we have a phone number, 608-256-2001. And Julia, was the those 3, 4, 5 years between the American release and the Mexican release, was that the norm? Was that something that
was strategized like that? It's a little bit what I was saying, that people thought the rock and roll was another rhythm, and even big bands played rock and roll. So it was not a youth movement as it was recognized before. So it was so strong by the end of the 50s, and many youngsters were having their rock and roll bands in Mexico, that finally the record companies had to say yes, and the radio stations had to say yes, but a little bit reluctant, I must say, because the fear of modernization that came, rock and roll came with a package of modernization. So we want to be modern. We want to chew gum, we want to consume all this and all that. We have to dance rock and roll. And our kids have to dance rock and roll. So it was like a pushing and pulling. We do it and we don't do it. Yes, we do it. But the morality, it's not good. But as I say, they were very, very conservative in the long run, no? And it was not a... They were like co-opted, and they were so excited to be able to record and all that. But it was because of this, of waiting and waiting and waiting. Besides, there were other rhythms that were very popular, like cha-cha-cha and mambo, that youth was dancing. They were more Caribbean, more other type of music, very danceable, which was important. Dancing was very important. So I always think and wonder that if rock and roll hadn't existed, the big rhythm for youth would have been cha-cha-cha.
Cha-cha-cha, or maybe mm-hmm. mambo too. No, I'm thinking a lot about
the. It's also very sexual and moving.
Yeah, I think a lot.
Yeah,
I think a lot about the role that TV, mainstream TV, and mainstream radio had in commercializing or making this a media phenomenon almost. Yeah. And I guess you're right. I can see that happening. You know, we want to be modern. We want to be like them, but little by little, just you know, going just little by little. We're gonna go to our next example. The next example is by Eddie Cochran. And I'm, you know, it's a really famous song too. The song's name is "Come On Everybody," and then, like the previous example, we're going to listen to the Mexican version of that. So, John, if you can play "Come On Everybody," this is Eddie Cochran. The tambourine there and the guitar makes me think of many other things that were, I feel, influenced by that many, many years later. We're going to hear now the Mexican version of this song. The name is Aviéntense Todos, and the band's name is Los Locos del Ritmo. How would you translate that, Julia? Let's talk about
the
that
crazy,
after
the crazy of rhythm.
The crazy people of rhythm, I guess. Crazy about rhythm. Aviéntense todos los locos del ritmo.
Es imposible que la gente quiera que no cante rock and roll. Y aunque digan los tarros música infernal, para mí es un dulce canto que me hace soñar.
¡Aviéntese todos!
Amazing. I love both a lot. Julia, tell us a little about the visual part of these rhythms, the dancing. How was that received in Mexico? How did people started incorporating twist maybe or swing before into the parties, into the concerts, into the scene, in the Mexico City scene?
It was difficult, as well as it was difficult to get the records, the imported records, if they were not recorded here. Or because there were television programs like American Bandstand, very popular in the United States, but it showed in Mexico. So then it was one way that you once a week could see something. Or there were films from the United States that portrayed people dancing rock and roll. So then you could get an idea of what was going on. And then if someone from Mexico would go to the United States and learn some dancing steps and then come back and then show the rest of the friends how it was danced, then that was perfect. So having parties on Friday night, Saturday night was wonderful. There was this important American community, the American school that still exists, but the American school was built like an American school, like a school in the United States, and had a gym and had dances at the gym.
Oh, there we go. So we didn't have clubs.
Yes.
We didn't have regular venues. We had to go to the high school gym.
We had to go to the high school gym or have private parties at the house with records, and people will share and imitate the dance steps that you would learn on television or film or your friends. There was one television program by one of the record companies, Orfeon. that recorded some of the artists that we are listening to, for example, these Locos del Ritmo. So they would appear in the show, in the television show, and they were like people dancing a little bit like American Bandstand idea. And so we would learn the dance steps. So that was it. But it was a lot of imagination and a lot of emotional thing, because there was no videos, there was nothing. It was just this moment on television once a week, and everything, the world has to stop because the program is going on.
The show was going on.
The show is going on, yeah.
I'm thinking right now about those parties, and I'm trying to imagine how they would organize maybe the sets, the way the order in which they would play the songs. So let me ask you this. Would they play, for example, one rock and roll song, then go to a cha-cha-cha, and then come back to a rock and roll song, and then go to mambo? What was how would a party those
it
days
depended
look like?
On the records. I would say they were large record players. And people would come, the kids will come with the records, but usually 45 RPM records, the small records, the vinyl records that have a huge hole. So then one would take turns. On, I want to listen to this, let's dance this, or this is popular right now on the radio, and I have the record. So you would put the records, there was like a thick tube that you put in the middle of the record player of the
the turntable, the needle?
The turntable, and then put the needle, and then it will come down. The next record, finish the first song, then the next song, and then the next song, because this was an automatic thing, this thick, round thing. So it was perfect for small records. It was perfect. It was perfect for that. So each one had the spirit of DJ. And
the grandfather of the original.
What I would say, it was these Spanish, versions in Spanish, and then the original versions, of course, and then the romantic songs.
The slower songs, yes.
That was the slow ones. That was for the end of the party when the lights got dimmer and the parents and the aunts and the grannies were there checking out that you wouldn't get too close, dancing cheek to cheek.
Well, and let me ask you this. What about the parties in which there was a band player playing and not necessarily the records? How would that look like?
Well, they will play, but you know, it was so exciting to listen to a band that it was mostly watching the band instead of dancing.
Let me ask the question again. Would they play rock and roll songs and then play maybe some local rhythms or Mexican rhythms or mambos or cha-cha-cha?
I believe that by this time of rock and roll and music exploding by the early 60s, there was just rock and roll.
Okay.
And twist that appeared in the United States, and also dancing twist. And many, many, there were dozens of rhythms, the mashed potatoes, the Popeye, the Watusi, that you name it, because the record companies were eager to invent new rhythms.
The mashed potatoes, we should bring that one back. Sounds
fun. Mashed potatoes with, you would move your feet as if you were mashing potatoes.
That's amazing. We're going to go to our next music example. The next one is Poison Ivy by the amazing Coasters from Los Angeles. Maybe we are going to let the song play a little more, and then we'll come back again to the Mexican version of this. Okay, so the Coasters, Poison Ivy.
She comes on like a rose, but everybody knows she'll get you in touch. You can look, but you better not touch. Poison Ivy.
she's pretty as a daisy. But look up, man, she's crazy. She'll really do you in if you let her get under your skin. Poison.
That's amazing. If you're just tuning in, we're listening to rock and roll from the 50s and 60s and their Mexican versions. You are on a public affair on WORT 89.9. We are broadcasting from downtown Madison, Wisconsin. And my guest today is Dr. Julia Palacios. She's an expert on this subject. She is in Mexico City right now. And again, the phone number is 608-256-2001 in case you have a comment, a question, or something that you want to share with us. Maybe you remembered the mashed potatoes or one of these amazing names, amazing dances. We're going to go next to the Mexican version of the Poison Ivy, and this has the translation is exactly the same, at least for the title. It's La Hiedra Venenosa, which means exactly that, Poison Ivy. And the name of the band is Los Rebeldes del Rock, Rebels of Rock. Here we go.
Pareces una rosa, bonita y olorosa, que atraes a los hombres. Una frivolidad,
pero nadie sabe,
que eres solo una hiedra ponzoñosa parecida a rosa. Tú eres tan hermosa, tan linda y primorosa, que embrujas a los hombres. Loca frivolidad,
pero nadie sabe,
Let me ask you this, Julia, at least for this song, it seems like at least conceptually the translation was trying to do or trying to incorporate the exact same meaning into the Spanish
version. Exactly. Yes, here the translator was who was it? I can't remember, but in the Rebeldes del Rock.
Los Rebeldes del Rock, desde la Ciudad de México.
It was one of the players. Oh no, the translator into Spanish was the singer Johnny Laboriel, which I want to say something. Johnny Laboriel, they came to Mexico City. His family, they are from Honduras. And they are Afro-Americans.
Afro-Latino, maybe, no? We should say.
Afro-Latinos, yes. Well, America comes from Canada to the Patagonia.
Afro-Americans, yeah. From the Afro-Americans.
That is America. And then the thing is that his skin, he's black. So, he was black. He passed away. And it was very impressive to have this rock and roll band with a black singer, and he had this special rhythm. He did the translation, and I must say, parenthesis, that his brother, Abe Abraham Laboriel, is one of the top bassists in the United States, and his nephew, Abe Laboriel, is the drummer of Paul McCartney's band.
Oh, there we go. There's a really direct connection.
A musical connection.
A really direct connection from Johnny Laboriel and Los Rebeldes del Rock to the Beatles.
To the Beatles, imagine. Yeah.
Amazing.
But anyway, yes, interesting. They are good musicians. It's a music family. But yes.
We have only 10 minutes left. Why don't we start talking about how this transitioned into the 60s, the civil rights movements across the United States, across Mexico. We can think about the student movement as well that was really strong in both countries and in Mexico as well. And how did the music adapt it or not
in the case of rock and roll, in the case of we have a much stronger lyricists during those years. Mm-hmm. What can we, how can we understand that transition?
Well, very, very commercially, many things happen. What the music industry in Mexico, radio and recording companies understood that they understood that there were many, many young people consuming music, but still we were very conservative. So we didn't want to continue with all this rock and roll, and we didn't want protests. All the for that we had Mexican corridos and the Mexican Revolution, if we want to be social. But for example, songs of Bob Dylan and John Baez and all that, and that folk, wasn't this. It wasn't that commercial. It wasn't that interesting, let's say. And it if it was political, no. We don't want to be political. We want to have fun. So then twist and all these rhythms I was talking about were very, very successful. Then with this youth culture, we had an import of artists from Spain. Name it Rafael, mostly. Rafael, Rocío Dúrcal, Marisol. They had films, they had wonderful songs, they were great. So it's better to connect with that. That was one. The other thing was that these rock and roll bands, with the strength of rock and roll and music, they aimed, the companies aimed for solo artists, not for bands. See? So then, for example, from the Tin Tops, the vocalist was Enrique Guzman, so now you're gonna sing solo. From the Black Jeans, the vocalist was Cesar Costa, now you're gonna sing solo. So then we had many artists having solo careers, playing with these huge orchestras and losing the rock and roll band. That was another thing. The other thing was then later, with all the, and my theory is that with the Beatles, with Revolver and Rubber Soul, the music got so complex technologically and so complex with the lyrics, as well as with Bob Dylan. Yeah, it was also a very important thing. That it was not easy to translate. How can you translate like a Rolling Stone?
Right.
How
right.
can you translate Norwegian Woods? So then this mechanism that had been very successful commercially just...
was dismantled. Yeah, there was a language barrier, you could say, maybe.
Yes, because the language, the lyrics got very complex. And the technology in the recordings got very complex. So it was easier to consume artists from Spain and do covers for very simple things. Then we have the surf and a go-go music and things, I mean, more fun. I mean, Johnny Rivers from the United States, was singing and, dancing music and go-go music and something funnier, something lighter.
And simpler, yes.
Getting into profound things. So what was translated was very, very, were very, very simple songs. And then when the student movement came in 1968, well, this was absolutely gone.
It was, yeah.
Because of course, if the student movement was a left-wing movement, left wings didn't want rock and roll because rock and roll was the music, or rock music was the music from the United States imperialism.
Right.
So
right,
we don't
right.
want that.
Yeah.
So in automatically all the youth that was with the student movement was rock was out. And then the other youth that was not with the student movement, that was not left wing, that were the right wing conservatives, were more into this ballads and singers from Spain and from Mexico and dancing and having fun, because all this we don't want, because we are still in the Cold War and we don't want communism. And so we changed the scene changed, but that's another story.
We have just 5 minutes left, and I don't want the hour to finish without playing our last example, and it's precisely linked, connected to what you just said about singers or front singers, front people, front men, going into solo careers. So we're going to play now Paul Anka's Put Your Head on My Shoulder, another really big name from the time. And then we're going to go to our final Mexican example from Enrique Guzman, precisely, that you just mentioned. So this is Paul Anka, Put Your Head on My Shoulder.
Put your head on my shoulder. Next to mine, dear, won't you kiss me once, baby? Just a kiss, good night.
I'm sure everybody out there, everyone out there recognizes Put Your Head on My Shoulder, another classic. And now we're going to hear the Mexican version, Enrique Guzman, who was lead singer from Los Rebeldes del Rock.
Los Teen Tops.
Okay.
Remember, we listened to him singing La Plaga.
Exactly. The first song. And this is him again playing
Rock and Roll,
Tu Cabeza en Mi Hombro, the exact same title in Spanish.
Tu cabeza en mi hombro, quiero yo tener siempre. Acaríciame, cielo, si me quieres tú. Quiero tener tus labios. Me quieres un beso tuyo, nena.
That was our last example from Enrique Guzman. That was Tu Cabeza en Mi Hombro. That translates exactly, it's an exact translation, excuse me, from Put Your Head on My Shoulder by Paul Anka that we listened previously. We have a couple of minutes left. I don't want the show to finish without thanking Sara Gabler, producer for A Public Affair, John Lang, that was engineering the show today, Steve in our in the radio station's reception, and Shelly Pittman, that it's behind this whole body of people working here. Okay, Julia, what can we say to close the show? What are the last things that we can think of this 10-year period, I want to say, between 55 and 65?
Well, that it was something very, very, very important in this connection, this cultural connection that still exists in a different way. But in this moment, there was an incredible openness, but an eagerness of connection culturally between these two countries. So this was in the 50s, 60s, early 60s. So many of the people that were the baby boomers and many of the people that are still alive certainly remember that it happened then. No, it happened then, and it marked our lives. Marked the lives of many
people, many generations. I'm wondering now about the music movements or genres that happened afterwards, like punk rock or grunge or many others that also had, you know, Mexican
Absolutely.
Mexican, equivalents or Mexican versions, but just the Mexican own interpretation of those rhythms. Julia, it's 1 o'clock here. It's 12 o'clock in Mexico City. I want to thank you for talking with us. Thank you so, so much for being on the air, being with us at WORT. I think it was a fun show. I think we played amazing examples. My name is Carlos Dávalos, and thank you. Thank you so much. Please stay at WORT.
Interest on the credit card just keeps on compounding, but the FCC can never shut this pirate sound down. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded, with information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded, with information that will never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded, with an admission that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded, with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream.
This is Danielle Jaworwiecka with the BBC News. Hello. A jet carrying the former Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte has left Manila for the International Criminal Court in The Hague, where he will face trial. ICC prosecutors allege that during his time in office, Mr. Duterte had thousands of drug dealers, users and others killed without trial. Here's Jonathan Head.
The Philippines government said it had received a warrant for his arrest from the International Criminal Court and was acting on it in order to meet its legal obligations. Mr. Duterte and his family contested his detention, but were unable to prevent his extradition.